Good morning, everyone. It's so nice to visit with you once again through the radio waves. I hope that each of you are well, being aware that you are within the compassion of the Buddha. Please join me by putting your hands together in reverence. All the good acts and myriad practices, because they are performed with a sincere mind and aspiration, become without exceptional, provisional good that will lead to birth in the Pure Land. Namo Amida Butsu. As we go about our daily lives, we come across many incidents, many stories in life that leads us to the Dharma. Over time, we will have or have been faced with difficulties, and very often we are faced with problems and issues. What is the Buddhist perspective, we may ask? In other words, how would a Buddhist respond? I think the Buddhist perspective would be to respond to our lives with wisdom and compassion, and that is all. Wisdom and compassion are often called the two pillars of Buddhism. So we should all respond to issues, to situations in our lives with wisdom and compassion. But what does that mean? What does wisdom and compassion mean? What the Buddha wants us to do in responding to difficult situations in our lives is to respond with caring and understanding. That's wisdom and compassion, I believe. When the Dalai Lama was asked the question, "What is your religion? What is Buddhism?" he responded like this, "My religion is kindness." Now, isn't that simple? My religion is kindness. Buddhism is kindness. But is it easy to understand? Probably not. The kindness that the Dalai Lama was talking about was that in understanding wisdom and compassion, it is caring and understanding. So now, however, when we have caring and understanding, we think that we should be nice. But Buddhism is not only about being nice. It would be wrong to think of Buddhism as a religion of being nice. Buddhism is about being real. When we are nice, very often, we are not being real. We are nice, but not real. Think of it. Think of the plastic smile. You may as well be snarling. But when we are real, more often than not, we will be nice. So being real, what is it? Being real in Buddhism is about seeing things as they really are. Don't we very often hear this? That Buddhism is about seeing things as they are. So then, when we are trying to be real, we are clearly trying to see things as they are. That's a phrase that we hear all the time, don't we, in Buddhism? Just see things as they are, with no opinion, no judgment. Seeing things as they are is really what this is all about. Buddha literally means one who is awakened, which means then one whose eyes are open. If you're awake, your eyes are open. And when we really see things as they are, then we are seeing reality. So it is not about being nice. Again, Buddhism is about being real. The Dalai Lama's statement that Buddhism is kindness meant that Buddhism is to be real. To illustrate what we've been talking about, I would like to relate this story to you of a couple in Hilo, Hawaii. I read this story in the Hawaii Herald. A friend of this couple saw them one day walking along a major thoroughfare in Hilo, near the Hompahonganji Hilo Betsuing. The lady was a thin woman who stood no more than 5 feet tall and weighed only about 90 pounds. She was holding her husband's hand and leading him as he walked slowly and haltingly, his right hand curled to his side. The husband had been a carpenter, and the parents of this friend were good friends, as both of their families came from the same prefecture in Japan. When this friend was young, he used to go over to their home to play with his family's two daughters, who were a bit older than he was. The husband was a very nice man, treating him like a son that he never had, playing with him and even helped him to make and to fly a kite. He would be very encouraging to this boy, patiently teaching this young man to fly this kite. However, as nice as this man was to this boy, there was another side to him. and this dark side made this boy afraid of him. When he drank, he became a monster who would lose his sense of right and wrong. He would abuse his wife and hurl nails that she had stored at, and then call his wife names like, "Baka, you fool." It would continue this barrage of foul language in Japanese. His daughters would attempt to intervene, shouting, "Otosan, yamete, yamete, dad, stop it, stop it." On really bad days, this 200-plus-pound carpenter would hit her in the face. Their neighbors could very often hear his shouting and his wife's painful cries. But in those days, no one called the police and no one intruded. For some reason, many women those days did not divorce, even if they suffered physical and mental abuse. One day, this man suffered a stroke. Fortunately for him, he was not bedridden, but the right side of his body was paralyzed and he had difficulty walking, and he could not speak. Because it was hard to understand him, he would shout. It got so embarrassing about his shouting that they finally had to move out of their house and went to live with her brother in the basement of her brother's house, so that people wouldn't be able to hear his shouting and yelling all the time. Well, in 1960, a massive tsunami destroyed much of Hilo, as you well recall, including Waikea Town, where this family lived. As the waves rushed in, the wife scrambled to help her husband escape to higher ground. It took tremendous effort for her to hold her husband tightly as they tried to escape the incoming waves. It was dark and the water was rising. People were shouting and debris from the waves was piling high. The wave consumed all the houses in the area and tossed them around like toys, sending them swirling and crashing into other houses. Cars were sailing along the water like boats in the blue ocean. Thinking that the wife would leave him behind to die and save her own life, well, now was a big chance to get away. To get away, no one will know. The husband began to cry inconsolably. But she managed, carrying her husband Opa style, and eventually had to drag him out of the rising water to safety. She would not let go of her husband. She herself could have drowned that day, but she chose to save her husband. After this, he never again shouted at her or said a harsh word to her. As he grew older, he had to rely on her more and more to do things for him. Why did she save him that day in 1960? Was it because she felt it was her duty to persevere and save and care for him? Or was it love? We will never know. But I like to think that it was because of caring and understanding, wisdom and compassion. In the magazine Shambhala Sun, in an article titled "Life is Tough," there was a Zen master called Bird's Nest Roshi because he meditated in an eagle's nest at the top of a tree. A government official came to see him one day, and standing on the ground below the Zen master, the official asked what possessed him to live in such a dangerous manner. The Roshi answered, "You call this dangerous? What you're doing is far more dangerous. Living normally in this world, ignoring death, impermanence, and loss and suffering as we all routinely do, as if this were normal and a safe way to live, is actually much more dangerous than going out on a limb to meditate. While trying to avoid difficulty may be natural and understandable, it actually doesn't work. We think it makes sense to protect ourselves from pain, but our self-protection ends up causing us deeper pain. It is not merely focusing on life's difficulties. The world may be upside down, but we still have to live in this upside down world, and we have to be practical on its terms. The teaching on transforming bad circumstances into the path doesn't deny that. What it addresses is the underlying attitude of anxiety, fear, and narrow-mindedness that makes our lives unhappy, fearful, and small. The article goes on to say that transforming bad circumstances into the path is associated with the practice of patience, kshanti, one of the six parameters of the Bodhisattva path. The essence of this parameter the strength of mind and heart that enables us to face the challenges and difficulties of life without losing our composure and inner tranquility. We cultivate the ability to be loving and compassionate in the face of criticism, misunderstanding, or aggression. We are neither elated by praise, prosperity, or agreeable circumstances, nor are we angry, unhappy, or depressed when we are faced with insult, challenge, hardship, or poverty. We cause no harm to others, and we do not judge others. In Buddhism, to live responding to life and to the world with kindness is to live with caring and understanding, wisdom and compassion. We need both. One without the other is useless. Wisdom without compassion is just as useless as compassion without wisdom. One without the other creates dysfunction. Only with both wisdom and compassion can we make us able to function. True kindness is nurtured in wisdom and compassion. In the story of the husband and wife, this lady was truly responding to life with wisdom and compassion, caring and understanding. So again, Buddhism is about being real. True kindness is to respond with compassion and wisdom, with a genuine caring and a deep understanding, the path of the Dharma. Thank you all for listening and allowing me to spend a few moments with you as we receive the Dharma in gratitude. Namo Amida Butsu.